Benjamin Wicker's 10 Books Every Conservative Must Read isn't just another reading list. It's an intellectual roadmap for cultural renewal. These aren't merely books conservatives happen to enjoy, but essential works that could transform our intellectually and morally impoverished society into a flourishing one. What makes these selections powerful is their foundation in a perennial wisdom about human nature that transcends any single political moment. True conservatism isn't merely opposition to big government or socialism, but represents a fundamental understanding of humanity's place in the cosmos, what Russell Kirk called the preservation of those permanent things that give meaning and stability to human existence. Aristotle provides the bedrock for conservative political thought, establishing a lineage back to ancient Greece. Unlike sophists who viewed morality as mere convention, Aristotle argued that society has natural foundations in the family, which expands to villages and then cities through natural development. As man is by nature a political animal, politics should perfect human nature rather than simply exercise power. The well-ordered family serves as society's seed form, from which morality emerges. Aristotle categorizes political regimes not by the number of rulers, but by whether they serve the common good or private interests. He views democracy as potentially problematic, since majorities can be as self-serving as tyrants. While tension between rich and poor is inevitable, a strong middle class provides stability. Aristotle warns, just as man is the best of animals when perfected, when separated from law and justice, he is the worst of all, a fundamental conservative insight showing why virtue must remain central to any healthy political system. G.K. Chesterton defended truth against utopian redesigns of the world. He saw embracing life's ordinary strangeness as sanity, while materialism represented dangerous reductionism. Whether Marxist economics, Darwinian genetics, or chemical explanations of love, materialist theories shrink reality into simple schemes, what he called an insane simplicity with calamitous results. Chesterton defended mystery in service of reason. The Enlightenment's rationalists, warring against religious faith, caused reason to self-destruct. This manifested in Nietzsche declaring reason a mask for power, Marxists reducing thought to reflections of material production, and modern thinkers denying meaning itself. Edmund Burke similarly warned against rebuilding society from scratch. His Reflections on the Revolution in France prophetically warned that revolutionary beginnings would devolve into bloodshed, fulfilled by the terror years later. Burke valued tradition as the repository of wisdom rooted in experience with human nature. Like Aristotle, he believed society was natural to man, not an artificial contract. For Burke, society connected those who are living, those who are dead, and those who are to be born. Why did advanced European culture descend into barbarism in the 20th century? Eric Voegelin identifies positivism, the denial of anything beyond our senses, as the perversion of science underlying political violence. For Voegelin, true science should explain reality as we experience it, not explain it away. We experience ourselves as complex beings with bodies, souls, intellects, and spirits, connected to the material world while yearning for transcendence. Voegelin argues that 20th century utopianism must be understood through ancient Gnosticism. The Gnostics twisted Christianity by claiming two deities, an evil Old Testament God who created the material world, and a good New Testament God rescuing pure souls. Modern Gnostics parallel this by elevating reductionist political theories to divine status, claiming omniscience through science, and believing their theoretical knowledge places them beyond moral judgment. This re-divinization of politics creates an all-encompassing state that promises earthly utopia, the essence of modern totalitarianism. Political movements increasingly take on religious characteristics, with their own dogmas, heresies, and rituals of purification, precisely what Voegelin warned about. What happens when moral relativism meets unprecedented technological power? C.S. Lewis warns that the modern quest to master nature will culminate in controlling human nature itself, creating a tyranny of the few over the many. Once human nature is erased and redrawn by scientific planners, there's nothing left to conserve. In The Abolition of Man, Lewis critiques a high school textbook that teaches values are merely subjective feelings. This undermines our capacity to recognize moral order, creating men without chests, humans whose reason and passions lack the heart connecting them to moral reality. Against relativism, Lewis presents the way, or Tao, the natural moral law recognized across civilizations. This isn't just one value system among many, but the sole source of all value judgments. Rejected entirely, and all values collapse. Our era is uniquely perilous because moral questions, should we do this, are replaced by technical ones, how can we do this? With genetic engineering, AI, or brain-computer interfaces, are we asking enough about whether we should develop these technologies? How could a young French aristocrat who spent just 9 months in America produce what many consider the best book ever written on democracy and the best book ever written on America? Alexis de Tocqueville's genius was seeing what Americans themselves couldn't, the unique character of our democracy with both its promises and perils. Americans were defined by two crucial characteristics, social equality and strong religious beliefs. Unlike Europe's hereditary aristocracy, the American soil absolutely repelled territorial aristocracy. America's religious foundation, particularly the Puritan influence, was even more significant. While the French Revolution emerged from Enlightenment skepticism, America's successful revolution grew from Christian principles. In America, government wasn't imposed from above, but grew organically from local needs. Townships became the foundation of ordered liberty, where people govern themselves in affairs most dear to them. Though friendly to American democracy, Tocqueville warned of dangers in the passion for equality. Beyond the manly and legitimate passion for equality lurked a depraved taste for equality that reduces men to preferring equality in servitude to inequality in freedom, a warning still relevant today. Conservatism and liberalism tell fundamentally different stories about human nature and morality. Conservative narratives embrace an eternal moral order to which reason and passions must conform. The defining conservative virtue is humility, deference to wisdom and conviction in a moral law we violate at our peril. Shakespeare's The Tempest demonstrates that evil stems from imperfections in human nature, not circumstances. The question of what one would do with Prospero's magic parallels the use of absolute political power. Each character would use it according to their nature, illustrating why conservatives fear concentrated power. In Sense and Sensibility, Jane Austen contrasts Eleanor's sense, reason guided by wisdom, with Marianne's sensibility, unguided emotions and passions. Our culture has embraced sensibility, with contemporary liberalism representing passion's victory over reason. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings elevates humble Samwise Gamgee as its greatest hero. The One Ring represents evil's vast scope, the self-limitation required of good people who refuse evil means, and totalitarianism, Sauron's desire to override individual wills and crush local communities. These stories don't merely entertain, they form our moral imagination and help us see the world as it truly is, not as we wish it to be.